This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Nitric oxide is a vital signaling molecule in cardiovascular health. We all make nitric oxide in our bodies, but as we age, it starts to diminish naturally. Being proactive in maintaining nitric oxide levels is vital for healthful aging because an underperforming cardiovascular system will limit the effectiveness of any other supplementation in your regimen. Just two capsules of Berkeley Life daily provides the dietary nitrate equivalent of 7 ounces of beets and can support energy levels, maintain healthy blood pressure levels, and improve general circulation. It's the professional-grade nitric oxide supplement that I recommend and prescribe for my patients. This is only available from healthcare providers. To get your Berkeley Life professional supplements, just go to drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life. That's drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life. You can also get Berkeley Life's patented nitric oxide test strips to conveniently test your own nitric oxide levels safely and easily at home. That's drhoffman.com/Berkeley Life for Berkeley Life nitric oxide supplements. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's a timely podcast because we're in the midst of a pandemic. Coronavirus is locking down much of America. Where I sit in New York City, things have come virtually to a standstill. I'm sheltering in place, actually venturing forth for some exercise. Took a nice run this morning. The weather is picking up. It's springtime in New York and the trees are blossoming. But there's sort of an eerie silence around the city, and the streets relatively deserted. The traffic is light. There's kind of an aura of apprehension around. And that's one of the reasons why I've invited today's guest, Dr. Benjamin Asher, to join us today. He is a board-certified otolaryngologist, but in his career path, he has moved in the direction of integrative medicine. For the past 30-plus years, as I have, he's practiced natural medicine along with high-tech medicine in a truly integrative fashion here in New York City. He is considered by many to be America's preeminent ear, nose, and throat doctor who utilizes the best of both worlds, an intelligent medicine approach. He is very well-versed in mind-body medicine. What that means is the effect of mood and the brain on physical outcomes. He incorporates that on a daily basis in his practice. And in fact, he's well positioned to do so because he has an extensive background as a meditation teacher for 30 plus years. So I can't think of a person better able to address some of our, shall we say, emotional and psychological needs during this crisis. Welcome, Ben. It's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine. Thanks for joining us. And by the way, I might say, you know, let's recount how this came about, Ben, is that I was blithely scuba diving on the island of Tortola last week, and I got a voicemail from you saying, hey, I have some ideas on what we can tell people amidst this looming crisis. And I was sitting there under the palm trees and the fluffy clouds, temperatures in the mid-70s, far away from the crisis. But I thought that when I came back, it'd be a pretty good idea to sit down with you and do a podcast on this subject.
Exactly how
context?
It happened. Thanks for having me on your show, Ron. I really appreciate it. And as I've been working with people throughout this pandemic, there's just such an enormous amount of anxiety that's coming up. And my question has really been, how should people work best with these difficult issues that are internal, that are coming up when we're being challenged and stressed the way we are? And so I've been working with my patients mostly on telemedicine because we've been instructed not to be in the office, or be out of the office as much as possible, and no non-essential personnel, et cetera. So I've been doing telemedicine with people. But what is coming up are these deep fears and anxieties. On my Facebook page, I've actually put together a few, 3-minute guided meditations just to help people work with some of that. But what's interesting to me, is that there are a lot of different philosophies for how to manage, these difficult emotions. Some people call them shadow emotions, the darker feelings. Some people feel like pushing them out of the way and just ignoring them is one approach. In my experience, and I don't know whether this is your experience, but in my experience, that approach doesn't work very well. When people repress feelings, they come out in other ways, often in physical symptoms.
Mm-hmm. This is classic Freudian theory, actually, that you're alluding to, although Freud in some ways has been discredited. He's the father of what is termed psychosomatic medicine, which is, he invented displacement theory, which means that anxieties sometimes get displaced into physical symptoms, right? Can you talk a little bit about that?
I'm actually not that well-versed in Freud, so I can't comment to that very much. Mm-hmm. The shadow concept, I think, actually comes more from Jung, and I'm not that mm-hmm. well-versed in that either.
Right.
But it's just my own experience working with people. The other piece is there's this whole fake it till you make it kind of approach, mm-hmm. which is you just kind of like pretend some ways that, or just do lots of positive affirmations. Once again, it ignores what the issues are, and when that happens, they come up in other ways. So people who have spent much of their lives kind of not paying any attention to this dark material, now that we're in the throes of where it's really being triggered, people are stressed to the max.
Mm-hmm.
So, my general approach is to try to open the door a little bit and let a little bit of the light in, so that some of these feelings can see the light of day and we can recognize that all they are feelings. And once we can start to feel, then these feelings can transmute and change and are no longer occupying so much energy in our brains that is really locking us down. So I have several tools that I'm using for that with people. Would you like me to go into some of that now?
Yeah, please.
Okay. So one of the things that I tell people is that feelings like anxiety they really have a hard time existing without a narrative. So what happens is, if you're feeling anxiety, whatever is going on, the narrative will be created for anxiety. So if you're feeling anxious, you may worry about money, you may worry about health, you may worry about your family. All those things are just stories that happen when you're feeling this feeling of anxious energy.
Is that so, akin to a what if kind of
right,
narrative?
Totally.
You know, it's like,
yeah,
what if? What if I lose my job? What if the economy goes into a depression that may make, 1929 look like a picnic? What if there are roving bands of marauders in the street? What if I come down with, a severe case of COVID-19 and there's not enough ventilators for me? And, hey, I'm considered expendable because I'm 60 years old. Yeah. Scenarios
right.
like that, I think, are really played across people's minds, and then they worry about
Absolutely.
Their loved ones, and there's a million what ifs.
Right. So, in cognitive behavioral therapy, I believe that what they do is they try to help you realize that your thoughts about this are irrational, and if you can get out of the irrational thoughts and get into more rational thinking, that it will reduce your anxiety. But my feeling is that what one can do is actually let go of the narrative altogether and just feel the feeling, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, if you catch yourself, you start feeling anxious and you start feeling worrying about the virus and getting sick, dropping the story of the virus and feeling what the feeling is. once you allow yourself to have the experience of just whatever the anxiety is, that feeling, it doesn't have a lock, it doesn't have a tether or a Velcro piece to hold on to you. Mm-hmm. So then it lightens, and it actually kind of unwinds and leaves. Now, there may be tons of anxiety, so that's not going to be the cure for all of anxiety in that moment. But it's a way to begin to process the feeling, to allow it to release so it's not so binding on your psychology. Mm-hmm. So that's one tool that I've found to be very helpful for people who are really feeling stuck.
Can I just interject here? Because, you know, in my limited understanding of meditation, and I must admit that, you know, I practice a lot of healthful routines, but meditation is only something that I come back to sporadically, unfortunately. And I aspire to have a better meditation practice. But in meditation, I was once taught that thoughts can be viewed a little bit like clouds. You know, they sort of pass across the sky. You know, sometimes they're, you know, beautiful, nice-looking clouds, and sometimes they're sort of dark, ominous clouds. But in meditation, it's thought that you should not go deeply into your thoughts and go into a cascade of worry or concern, but just view the thought as if it was a passing cloud that will, you know, gently blow across the horizon and ultimately is likely to blow out of sight.
Yes, I mean, that is one meditation practice, and it works very well, and it can be very calming for people to just sit and whatever is coming up, just observe it with curiosity without engaging in it and just letting it move through as it moves through, as you just be with your breath. That's a very effective meditation practice for many people. So it's more in the lines of the Buddhist mindfulness or Vipassana type practice that people... So there are other meditation practices. Some of them use mantras like transcendental meditation or Vedic meditation, or there's a practice and it's taught in New York called Ziva, which is an offshoot of transcendental meditation. Those are all mantra practices where people actually, you're given a word, a meaningless sound, which you use in an effortless way that calms the mind. That when you're not thinking your thoughts, you go back to your mantra, and that sort of calms your mind and settles you down. So that's a different kind of practice. But there are many different meditation practices. So, I find if people can just, one thing that people are very afraid of is allowing themselves to have any negative feelings, or until they're so strong, then they can't do anything about it. So just beginning to take the edge off it can really make a big difference. One person's work who I find to be very helpful, and it's a tool that's completely free, is the work of Byron Katie. And her website is thework.com. And she has a very elegant method. Byron, B-Y-R-O-N, Katie is her last name, K-A-T-I-E. Mm-hmm. And her website is thework.com. It's free. And in it, there is an explanation of how to do what she explains. And then there are all kinds of YouTube videos that watch her doing this process. And basically, you take any difficult feeling, difficult experience, and you basically ask it four questions. And there's a little worksheet that she has that you fill out. Mm-hmm. It's very elegant. It's very effective in terms of reworking difficult, challenging feelings as well. So I often recommend patients that are really feeling stuck do that. And sometimes tools where you're actually cutting to the chase of the energy of the feeling can be more rapidly effective than just doing talk therapy, in my experience. Mm-hmm. So other tools, in terms of the meditation practices, there are two very good, popular phone apps that you can do. One is called Calm, and one is called Headspace. And they are guided meditation practices. They change regularly, and you use them on a daily basis. And I have a number of patients that are really enjoying them and finding them very effective in terms of being more calm and rooted and centered. And this is really helpful when things are really out of control like they are now.
Mm-hmm.
So a number of people that are in my practice that are chronically sick, one of the big issues that they have is trauma, mm-hmm. that they've had a lot of trauma in their life. And it's very interesting to me how people underestimate their trauma. If I ask a person, have you had any trauma, they always say things like, well, I haven't had any more trauma than anybody else. But, I mean, I don't know how much people know about how much trauma people have had. But that piece is a big issue for many people. And with all the being locked down and unable to be free to do a lot of the avoidance measures, people are doing
the daily busyness issues, that keeps our mind off things.
Business. Yeah, right. These issues are really coming up. Mm-hmm. So when you say
trauma, what are we talking about? Are we talking about actual physical or sexual abuse? Verbal abuse, bullying, true PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, after, seeing a murder or being a crime victim, what are some of these triggers?
I mean, those are all significant traumas, and they are, it's surprising how many people have had those experiences. Many people have had car accidents or witnessed accidents or, death of a loved one who's mm-hmm. died in a painful or a challenging way. What happens is these traumas happen and they accumulate, or you have one big trauma and then other traumas reinforce it, but we don't deal with, we haven't dealt with the trauma per se, and so it is living in us. This book called The Body Keeps the Score, mm-hmm. By Basil van der Kolk, goes through a very elegant mm-hmm. explanation of who we have had trauma, how it actually lives in our nervous systems. And you can actually
see actually
that trauma.
It sort of reorganizes the brain. There are actual studies that are very sensitive in terms of analyzing brain function and structure that suggest that particularly early life trauma reorganizes the brain so that people become hypersensitized to stress. They become, which is adaptive. It's from an evolutionary standpoint, it's adaptive, because if they've been assaulted or threatened at an early age, the alarm mechanisms of the body become much more sensitive, because it's actually adaptive to be more on the lookout for danger.
Absolutely. So there are some tools. I think because people don't recognize that they've had trauma or have blocked it out, don't go seek the tools for it. But relieving that can make such a big difference in freeing ourselves up from being stuck in a deep cycle of dark feelings. And sometimes the dark feelings are there because they're wanting us to move into this other place. Anxiety is often just kind of like us holding the door shut so we don't have to open that door and look and see what's inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that inside sometimes is some trauma. So I recommend to people that after discussing with them, finding that that they have some trauma in their life, to do some specific trauma therapy. The one that Dr. van der Kolk speaks about in his book is EMDR, which stands for eye movement desensitization mm-hmm. and reprocessing.
I've heard of that. Can you describe that in detail? Because I think that's a fascinating subject. And frankly, I got to say, on the face of it, it sounds kind of quacky. I mean,
it does sound quacky, but I've done it myself, mm-hmm. and it's very effective. So what you do is you work with a therapist, and you talk about the trauma, the traumatic event, while the therapist has a wand, and they're having you move your eyes right and left while you're talking about the traumatic event.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, and I don't understand the neurophysiology of it, but somehow that allows the nervous system to let go of the trauma that is stuck.
Yeah.
And freeze up the energy. And it's quite an extraordinary experience. You can really feel a lot lighter.
Yeah.
If you do it. The EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
Mm-hmm. And it's highly controversial, but I've seen some really good results with that. Not that I practice it, but people have told me that it can be very, it's a real healing ritual for people who have deeply embedded trauma.
Right. A couple other trauma texts. There's something called somatic experiencing, which is based on the work of Peter Levine. And that's based on seeing how animals, how they process trauma. And it's a body work practice. It's sort of a mind-body practice of unwinding the trauma in the body. And there's a third tool developed by a man named Stephen Porges. It's called Safe and Sound. It's another trauma practice, which is also very effective. So those are all tools that are helpful. If you're stuck at home in this moment, they may not be immediately available, but to know that those tools are there, you could start to research them, looking for things to do so that you could start to work with this if this material is coming up while you're in your safe at home process.
Well, perhaps there's no better time to initiate these processes. And, you know, I think one of we're looking for a silver lining in the cloud here. One of the positive aspects of this experience for all of us is that, you know, we're going to have more robust medical systems. We're going to have more robust epidemiological systems that provide, you know, better forecasting, early warning. We're going to have more robust financial systems that can withstand the shock of episodes like this, which, you know, truly are inevitable because nature throws us a curveball from time to time. And these are the black swan events that sometimes tank economies. But also from the standpoint of personal resiliency, this is an opportunity to maybe take inventory on your personal resiliency status, and maybe to take steps to augment your personal resiliency, because we're comforted by the fact and cosseted by the fact that life is relatively easy from a material standpoint in the, you know, first part of the 21st century. But history tells us that shocks are inevitable, and personal resiliency is a very valuable quality to cultivate. So I think these are measures that I think can help us overcome some of the subconscious handicaps that may impair our ability to respond to crises.
Absolutely. And I think that is absolutely the silver lining, that that there is a way that when we are stopped like this, we can no longer just continue to imagine that it's all, you know, moving forward, going to be business as usual. It just can't be anymore. So we do really need to make some drastic changes. I'm just looking. It's interesting. I saw some, you know, there's all these things floating around the internet. These inspirational pieces. Mm-hmm. And, somebody sent something about how the fact that there's no longer any smoke in Wuhan, China, and, you know, the right. Water's clear.
We're healing the planet.
Chirping. Right. We're healing the planet, and all this stuff is happening, right? So it's like, oh, this is a wake up call. Oh, well, things can shift. Things are shifting back in a different way. It makes you wonder what it is about nature that's pushing this forward. And what we're doing now in this enormous catch-up is not any way, shape, or form something that we can use as general public health policy for what's going to happen the next time this happens, which is, as you have said, absolutely inevitable. So, how we think about these things, we need to start now, and start making some effective changes in our own lives.
Okay, this is a good point at which to pause, because I want to delve further into how the current crisis is stoking our fears and how we can better cope. Our guest is Dr. Benjamin Asher, best known as one of the country's foremost integrative ENT doctors. He's board certified in otolaryngology, Harvard trained. He incorporates both high-tech conventional methods in his practice, as well as deploying natural therapies in treating various problems, sinus problems and allergic problems that involve the ENT system. But he's also well-versed in mind-body medicine, meditation teacher, 30-plus years, and so we've got more tips coming up for you in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Stay with us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.